Hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration.com. You can personalize your fueling and hydration strategy so you perform at your best with 15% off your first order of electrolyte and carbohydrate fuel with the code OA23 at Precision Fuel and Hydration.com. Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm your host, Coach Rob Wilby, and every week I bring you an episode of this podcast to help motivate and inspire you. Hopefully, we're also going to be giving you a bunch of information about training for triathlon, Ironman, half Ironman, and endurance events that's really going to help you understand how to get the most out of your limited training time. I run our own triathlon coaching squad, Team Oxygen Addict, and within the team, we've got a bunch of people who really love triathlon. They love endurance sport, and the one common thread amongst almost all of them is that they are busy professionals with busy working lives, busy home lives, lots going on, but they're passionate about the sport and about getting the best out of themselves. So this really, for me, this podcast has got two reasons for doing it. One, it's to talk to my athletes and explain what's going on in their training plans on a week-to-week basis, help give some reassurance and some explanations. But secondly, for guys who are not coached by us, it's a chance for you to learn from the coaching that I give to our athletes. And it's a chance for you to improve the training that you do. And hopefully we can dispel some of the myths that are out there and we can help you get the most out of, you know, what for almost everyone I've spoken to is limited training time around professional and personal obligations. So I really hope this helps you out if you're not one of our coached athletes. All we ask is if you could do a couple of things for us. This podcast is always going to be free. As a thank you, if you've enjoyed this episode, it would be great if you could like and subscribe on YouTube, or if you could click follow on the podcast player that you're listening to this on. Leave us a review maybe as well. But just by liking and subscribing, it helps our show get shown to more people who might not have heard of us. And that in turn helps more triathletes out. And I think it genuinely opens up the sport to people who are not coached if they can get access to quality coaching information and they can go and have really good events and they can really enjoy the sport. Everybody's a winner. Next up, if you are not coached by anyone, not coached by us, and you're looking for triathlon training, coaching and advice, or any kind of endurance coaching, training and advice, you can contact us. There's a link in the show notes. It goes straight through to me. It'll book to my calendar and you can have a membership call with us to find out more about how being a member of Team Oxygen Addict can help you out with your endurance goals for this year. If you're looking for help and advice as well, there's also the opportunity to email us. You can do that at help@oxygenaddict.com. Send us an email to tell us a little bit about yourself and your background, and I'll do whatever we can to help you out. Right, so this episode this week is going to be talking about baseline testing protocols for triathlon. So we're going to talk about how we can test and get baseline numbers for your bike, power and fitness, for your swim speed and fitness, and for your run speed, pace and fitness. The reason that this is so important is it's a very, very misunderstood area. Almost seems like as more years pass by and as more ways to train come along, the different various things like Zwift and the different things you can train with online, everyone's introducing their own training protocols for different reasons, and people are getting confused by it more and more as the years go by. And my big aim for this show is just to simplify things for people. And if anything, I want people leaving this show with less doubt and more confidence in what they're doing, less worry in what they're doing, less worry that they're doing the wrong thing in training, and more convinced that they're doing the right thing in training. Because one of the common threads in athletes I always talk to when I did a lot of face-to-face coaching was people would come up and say, I've read this article, I've watched this video, I've seen this Instagram post often by pro triathletes. Do you think I should be doing that? Do you think I should be training like that? Should I be using this testing protocol or that training protocol? People are very, very confused. So we want to reduce this down and make it as simple as possible without making it too simple. So people are really clear about what they can do in training, how they can test along the way to get baselines so that all their training is accurate and at the right training zone for where their fitness is at the moment, how often to test in the future going forward so that you can be sure that you can update your zones when necessary, but no more often than necessary. Okay, so We're going to kick this off with just with a quick shout out to our sponsors, precisionfuelandhydration.com. If you've not heard of them before, they're an awesome company. They make electrolyte sachets and electrolyte tablets. They make carbohydrate gels, carbohydrate fuel, carbohydrate chews. They are an absolutely fantastic company. They've sponsored the show for about 7 years now, and they sponsor the show because I like them, believe in the product. I like the people behind the company. But more importantly, I think they solve a really difficult problem for triathletes that had never really been solved before, which is that everybody's different. Everybody sweats a different amount of fluid volume and sweats a different concentration of sodium. And they were the first company to really bring this to attention. Certainly from my point of view, I didn't understand this at all. And back when I was racing back in, 20 odd years ago now, it was a pretty rare person that actually had any kind of electrolyte tablets at all when they were racing. We would sometimes try and use the traditionally available sports drinks that were out there. But as time has gone by, we've realized they didn't have nearly enough sodium in there to replace the sodium that most of us lose in our sweat. To put some numbers on this, most commercially available electrolyte drinks that you might find in the supermarket have somewhere from 250 to 500 milligrams of sodium in per litre. Most people sweat in the region of 1,000 milligrams per litre. So even drinking those available drinks from the supermarket, you're still net negative in sodium as you go along. And if you're racing on very hot days or very long races or both, you end up with massively reduced sodium levels. And the sodium is the thing that helps your body maintain its fluid balance. It's not just drinking water. So if you're sweating out salty water, but just replacing water, you're effectively watering down your electrolyte concentrations even more. So for someone like me, I was often getting really sick in hot races or hot long races in particular. If I was doing Ironmans in the heat, I would cross the line in a terrible state and end up vomiting in the medical tent and needing drips. And I just didn't understand why. I didn't understand what I was doing wrong. I would often think I'd swallowed some water or I was just sick at the end of it. And it was because my sodium concentration was so diluted by the end of the race that my body was, the technical phrase is hyponatremic. I was vomiting more water out as my body's response to try and make that fluid level in my body more salty, if you like, to make it more concentrated. So realizing I could have PFH's 1500 milligram sachets was an absolute game changer for me. And it's really allowed me to train and race confidently in the heat and over long distances without any of the problems that I had. And I really believe that it would have changed the course of my racing career if they'd been available back then when I was taking racing and training really, really seriously. And I know Andy Blow, the founder of the company, a much, much better athlete than me. He was won 70.3s and qualified for Hawaii and went there and raced. And he had very similar problems. We've both got sweat losses that are up close to 2,000 milligrams per liter of sodium. So if you can imagine that, it's like 2 grams of sodium we lose per liter of sweat. It's almost impossible to perform in the heat under those conditions. So anyway, you can go over to precisionfuelandhydration.com. You can use their free fuel and hydration planning tool, some questions you'll take in an online quiz that takes a couple of minutes, and it'll give you a really good lead as to whether you're a very heavy or very salty sweater. If you are, you can even visit them in person and have a sweat test done to find out the exact milligrams of sodium and the exact amount of fluid you lose as you're racing and training. And that will really help you balance your own carbohydrate, electrolyte, and fluid needs. So you can refine your strategy in training, and then you can race with it as well. Now, if you're listening to this during the winter, if we're doing lots of indoor training, obviously it's really important. If you're indoors and you're getting very, very hot, the fluid balance and the electrolyte balance are both key to staying hydrated. And the electrolyte balance is key to keeping your fluid levels there as well. So it's interesting this. Although these guys do sponsor the show, this isn't it's not an advertisement. This is me pointing out the genuine benefits and the importance of staying hydrated and keeping your electrolyte levels where they need to be. Because your training will be massively compromised by it if it's not. You'll be super, super thirsty after training. And or if you're an athlete who suffers from cramps when they're training, typically calf cramps or hamstring cramps, that's a really good sign that your electrolyte levels and that your fluid levels are not in balance. And just by taking more electrolyte sachets in the water you're drinking can really, really help you out. So get over to precisionfuelandhydration.com. check out the information there, use their online calculators, buy some of their products because I think they're fantastic. And if you are a first-time purchaser, you can use the code OA23 at checkout for 15% off your first order of electrolytes and carbohydrate fuel. All right then. So on to this week's session where we're going to give you the information that we want to pass on to you. So baseline testing. This is the first thing and the most important thing I want to underline to you. I'm going to use the phrase baseline testing. And I've been using this a lot with my athletes recently. For those of you who are doing this for the first time, you won't have any of these psychological hangovers happening. You're just going to do your test and the numbers are going to come out, whatever the numbers are, and they will simply be a place for you to build from, hopefully to improve on in future, or if you're following the right training plan, to guaranteed improve on in future. But the purpose of doing the test is not to get a number which you can then make bigger in the future. That's a byproduct of it. The purpose of doing the test is to set a baseline so that all the training you do over the next block is exactly tailored to you and your current level of fitness. And the advice I'll give to everybody is that those fitness levels, then they're not going to need testing more often than about every 8 weeks for the vast majority of people. There are outliers around there, and we'll talk about those later on. But for the vast majority of you, testing and then doing the test again in 8 weeks' time, that eight-week block, you're going to be fine with the numbers that you were at 8 weeks earlier. And actually, it doesn't matter if you're training a little bit lower than the intensity, because you are going to get fitter across the block. And the temptation is, you know, the temptation, frankly, for a lot of people is to do a test every week or every other week. I'm going to explain why we don't need to do that. And we'll explain why it's okay to train, if anything, a little bit lower than your levels rather than a little bit higher. And that can sound counterintuitive, but we'll go through why that's the case. So the first thing, it's baseline testing. For you athletes who are doing tests and have trained for an extended period of time, especially if you are starting a winter block of training and you've just had a break from training, or you've done a race, you've had a break from training, and you're about to set out on another block of training, it's reasonable to expect that your levels of fitness have dropped either a little bit or significantly from the last time you did tests. And so my advice to you here is, this is a baseline. It's just to set an accurate number to train at. It's not a pass or fail. It's not an A level. Having a lower number than previously isn't any kind of failure. And don't think of it as losing anything. I often hear athletes say, I've lost 7 watts since the last test. Forget all of that. You're just a little bit stale at the moment. That old fitness hasn't gone anywhere. Your body's still got the ability to do that. You just need to get a few sessions under your belt. You will build back to those previous levels really quickly. But the important thing is you're going to make the most progress in training as fast as you can by training at the exact intensity that you need to train at for you. So that means to say, if your friend has a level at 200 watts and yours is at 180, you're not going to catch him or her up any faster by training at 200. Actually, your progress is going to be slower if you try and do more quickly. You need to set the level exactly at the level it needs to be for you. Okay? So the purpose of the baseline is to set a baseline for you to make sure that all the training coming up is as accurate as it can be and that you get the most bang for your training buck. We're going to set your training zones from this, and that will allow us to tailor your workouts perfectly to you. Now, with the athletes I coach, we use a training package called Training Peaks. It's a fantastic piece of software, and it allows me to give two different athletes with two different levels of fitness the same session, but it will appear different to them. What do I mean by that? Well, what I mean by that is if athlete A needs to work at 200 watts and athlete B needs to work at 300 watts, I can put a session in that's set at 100% of their FTP, and the software does the maths for us. So for athlete A, their training will come up on their Garmin screen or Zwift or wherever at 200 watts. It'll come at 100% of their number. Athlete B will have it appear at 100% of their number. So the same session is completely different sessions for two different athletes. And that's really important because if we go back into the day, a big criticism that was leveled at coaches who were trying to make a business of coaching was this sort of criticism of a cookie cutter training plan. It's copy and paste training. And Training Peaks really allows us to use the same training sessions with the same training intent, the same training stimulus for two athletes who need different training intensities relative to their own either functional threshold power or whatever sport we're training in. And it makes the training load correct for them. So it deals with this criticism of cut and paste coaching entirely, because if two athletes are training for the same event in the future, it makes sense that they're going to need very similar training plans to get to the same event, but it needs to be subtly different in the intensities, sometimes the durations, but mainly around the intensities need to be set to their own individual training zones. And that's the magic of the Training Peaks software that we use. If you're new to us and you come to us, we'll do these baseline tests, and then the bike tests will be at the power you need to ride at. The run sessions will be at the speed you need to run at. The swim sessions will be at the speed you need to run at. And everything will be relative to you. And that way I could give the same training session essentially to a pro triathlete over this side or a complete beginner over this side, and it will give them training stimulus that's going to improve both of these athletes. So that's a really interesting thing to remember here. Software and technology is allowing us to reach hundreds, thousands of athletes around the world and leverage very similar training plans to get to very similar events, but have the actual workouts be completely different for individual athletes. So you can be really confident that the workout that you're doing is perfect for you and your physiology right now. Okay. So this in a way allows us to customize training plans without physically as a coach having to go in and customize a training plan. Way back in the day when I started 20 years ago, I would have to send an athlete training session on a spreadsheet and it would say, you know, run at 7 minute miles. And then if I was sending a training session to another athlete, it might say run at 9 minute miles. You can see that the work involved in that was tremendously time consuming, but it was necessary to ensure that the athletes had individualized training sessions for them. I can now leverage technology and spend most of my time working actually with athletes rather than doing what is essentially sort of scientific admin in the background. The software can do all of that for us, which is fantastic. So as I said, we're going to do these baseline tests and then we're going to do them again, probably in about 8 weeks' time. For the vast majority of athletes, I work on an 8 week training cycle. And if we're entering into a winter training block, we'll do 8 weeks of training, we'll retest, we'll usually have a bit of a break, then we'll do another 8 weeks of training and we'll retest. And the main purposes of our training during this winter block are largely around doing hard work on the bike, doing steady runs and doing skill-based swims. And our overall body's aerobic fitness is going to be affected by the hard training that we're doing on the bike. So I'm going to spend some time now talking about FTP testing and why we do that on the bike. But there's much more to it for triathletes than just getting fit on the bike. As our body gets better at, if you like, the physiological challenge of training, and by that I mean we're trying to get our body better at using oxygen in our muscle cells to produce energy. We're trying to get more efficient at that. And we're trying to get better at dealing with the waste products of exercise. So the lactic acid that gets produced, that's the thing that's ultimately going to mean that we have to stop training. We have to slow down. It's the thing that creates the feeling of burning in our muscles. If we get better at dealing with that, well, I'm not going to lie to you, it's never going to feel easier, but you are going to go faster whilst maintaining that same feeling. So our body learns to use oxygen better and it learns to use fuels better. So we get more efficient at using fat as a fuel. And also we get better at sort of using this lactate that gets produced and dealing with the lactate that gets produced. And we can go faster. We can produce more power. We can run faster. We can swim faster for the same level of how it feels to us, if you like. So while training at 100% of FTP is always going to feel hard, you are going to gradually produce more power. And if you were riding outside, you would go faster. If you were running, you would be running faster for the same sort of lactate levels or the same heart rate as you're doing there, and you will swim faster for the same kind of effort that you're putting into the pool. So doing these tests regularly is important, but it's not important enough that we need to do it more. We don't need to test more regularly than every 8 weeks. Now then, there are a couple of exceptions to this. When I have new athletes who come along, sometimes the first time they ever do these tests, if we've got complete beginners to the sport, the first time they ever do them, they don't do the test well. They haven't learned to do the test yet. For some people, if you say to them, I want you to do 20 minutes as hard as you can, they'll get it right first time. But some people will go far too hard. They'll go at the kind of power, pace, or speed they can only maintain for 2 minutes, and then the power, pace, or speed will drop off across the test. That doesn't really give us a valid test. So we'll talk in detail about each test in a minute, but for athletes who are very new to this, you sometimes find that either they don't do the test well the first time, or they get better at learning how hard they can go, and that we can do the test again to help them set a more accurate baseline. So often it can look in a very new athlete that they've made a massive jump in fitness really quickly, when in reality, what's probably happening is they've just got better at learning to judge how hard they can go as part of the test, essentially. And experienced athletes tend to have a very good feel for this and know how hard they can push themselves, and know that how it feels in the first few minutes won't be how it feels at minute 10 or minute 15. Okay, so there's the importance and the introduction to why we're going to do baseline testing. What I'm going to do now is go forward. I'm going to talk about the individual tests for swim, for bike, and for run, and how we can use those as triathletes to inform our training going forwards. Okay, so first up, let's talk about baseline testing on the bike. So the baseline test we're going to use is called a functional threshold power test. What this test is going to represent is essentially a way we can set your training zones so that every bike session you do from now on is at a specific intensity for a specific reason. And the two of those reasons are going to be either to help improve how much power you can put out at your functional threshold power, so that's making the engine size bigger, or if we're going to talk about the long, steady rides that you'll be doing outdoors, the purpose of those is to work at a specific intensity and teach your body to use a different fuel mix and be more efficient. So essentially, our body can learn to use fat more effectively as a fuel. It can choose to use more fat to fuel exercise at a lower intensity, but only if we train it how to do that. So in very simple terms, our body is going to use fat as a fuel at very low intensities, but as that intensity gradually rises, what happens is we gradually introduce using more and more carbohydrates, and critically, above a certain level, our body then stops using fat as a fuel and almost turns it off completely. So if you go out and you do a really hard ride, what you're not doing is you're not teaching your body to burn fat, because your body just thinks, well, we're going so hard, I need the kind of fuel that I can use to get this amount of energy per minute. That's carbohydrate. And it pretty much turns off the fat fuel almost entirely. There's a kind of sweet spot. If you can hang out at that sweet spot, your body is going to get it's going to get more efficient at getting energy from fat at that intensity. And it's gradually going to learn to get more energy from fat. So if we can hang out around that kind of sweet spot, we can train our bodies to get more energy per minute from fat. And that's really the purpose of your long outdoor ride. Now, for most people, that sweet spot is somewhere in the 60 to 70% of FTP range. So let's stick our finger in the air and say it's around 65% for most people. If you do your long rides around the area and you do them consistently around the area, your body's going to get more efficient at getting energy from fat. And therefore, all the way in the future, when you do your Ironman, it can choose to get energy from the body fat that you've already got. And effectively, that's the ideal thing. You're going to go fastest on race day if you spent a considerable amount of time training your body to get energy from fat. So it's really important that we get the FTP test right, so we know where that point is relative to the FTP 100%. Now, the other side of this is, if we can make the overall engine size bigger, if we could say take you from a 200 watt FTP to a 300 watt FTP, still riding at 65%, you'd be now at 65% of 300 rather than 65% of 200. You'd be going much faster, but your body will still be getting loads of energy from fat. And that's essentially the key to the second part of our training plans, making you more efficient to getting energy from fat. But for right now, what we want to do is we want to work on expanding your engine size. And to do that, we need to make your FTP bigger. We need to just increase that number that you can put out. So that's the significance of your functional threshold power. And in simple terms, what we're doing in an FTP test is we're going to work out how hard you can ride for 1 hour. So at the end of this, you'll get a number. It'll be, let's say, 200 watts. The FTP means that in a race, you could ride at 200 watts for an hour continuously. For most people, that is going to be incredibly challenging to do, especially in the world of indoor trainers and training on your own and stuff. So that's the key. It's in a race. Now, for most people, you can probably only hold it for 30 minutes on your own training indoors, but that gives you a kind of ballpark. If you were to enter a 1 hour long time trial outside in the summer, highly motivated, you should be able to hold about 100% of your FTP for an hour. But it's going to be very, very difficult. Now, the test could be and used to be as simple as ride as hard as you sustainably can for 60 minutes. But that's obviously really, really challenging. So we've settled on an easier way, not an easier way to do this, but a test that takes less time. We'll have you ride as hard as you sustainably can for 20 minutes. And then we will take 95% of that number. And for most people, for the vast majority of athletes, that is accurate enough to inform our training for the kind of training that we're going to do. Now, some people will talk about going into labs, having lactate tests done, having blood taken after doing various ramp tests. And you'll see a lot of this with the Norwegian testing method. They actually still take blood samples from the earlobe and test it for lactate levels. That's all fine and good, and it's absolutely physiologically correct, and you've got a laboratory there, fine. But this test right here is good enough for 99.9% of the people, 99.9% of the time. And I'd say for all age groupers, all the time, the 20-minute test is going to give us all the information that we need to go. So if an athlete comes to me and he says, I'm going to go to a lab and I'm going to have lactate testing and VO2 max testing done, I'll actually advise them not to. I'll say, don't go and do that. We don't need that information for the purposes of your training. It can be interesting, sure, but we don't need it for the purposes of our training, and it won't make your training with us any more accurate. So that's really important to understand. It's not a less than test. It's the perfect test for what we need to do. So how do we do this test? We're going to warm up. We're going to get to the point where we're ready to go. And then we're going to do 20 minutes as hard as we sustainably can for those 20 minutes. If you've got a power meter on your bike, this is great. What we want you to do is look at the numbers in front of you and try and hold the number consistently for the 20 minutes. If it's your first time doing this, it's okay to do it blind and not even look at the power meter. But the thing to remember is it doesn't feel in the first 2 or 3 minutes that hard. It will feel incredibly hard over the last 5 to 10 minutes. So don't go out way too hard over the first few minutes. What we're looking for when you look at the information afterwards is a power curve that stays exactly level for the 20 minutes. Now then, a few little nuances of this. If you've got a trainer or a smart trainer or a watt bike or a bike like that's got power meters and it's got erg mode on it or a kicker, don't have erg mode turned on for the test. You need to be doing free riding. So ensure that you turn erg mode off. You can turn this off in Zwift in the app. You can turn it off various other places as well. But Google it beforehand so you know what you're doing. Make sure it's turned off, because if erg mode is on and the workout that you're doing has got a suggested FTP, it will hold you there. So turn erg mode off, okay? We're looking for even power, not even effort. So it's going to feel much easier over the first few minutes than it feels over the last few minutes. Beware of any predictions. If you're an athlete who's coming back to this, my advice to you is aim for 10% lower than the last test that you did. That's a really good benchmark. And don't think of it as having lost power. Think of it as setting a benchmark. So 10% lower than your best ever numbers is a good finger in the air for where to get started. And if you're a brand new athlete to this, I'd advise you not to do the test as your first ever ride. Do a free ride on Zwift and try some 5-minute intervals at different power levels and get a feel for what you think you could hold for the 20 minutes. And you will get a good feel for that by trialing it at, you know, 20 watt steps along the way. Now, if the test goes wrong, if you go out way too hard and the power really tails off, well, I'm going to encourage you to still keep on going for the 20 minutes because that 20 minute average is going to give you a pretty good average number anyway. But like I said, the ideal is to have that flat power number. We can do a little bit of adapting afterwards if we need to, but commit to doing the 20 minutes along the way. Even if you've gone out too hard, just try not to stop at any point during the test. You can drop the power down, but try not to stop. That will give us a really good feeling, okay? Make sure you've got a fan in front of you if you're on the turbo. Make sure you've got some water ready. Make sure you're relatively rested. You don't want to be doing this the day after another hard session, but a day or two of, you know, easier training before you do the FTP test, fine. In fact, usually just a day without any hard training before is enough for most people at this point. Okay. You probably are going to get different numbers inside and outside. Most people do. Can't tell you which way the difference will be because it seems to be different for different people. Some people can put out more power outside. Some can put out more power inside. But test inside for the winter block. And then we'll do a separate test outside as we transition to training outside. But just be aware that those two numbers will be different. And if you're an athlete who's done this over several years, I know, for example, there's a 20 watt difference for my inside and my outside numbers. So if my inside FTP is 250, I'll work off 225 when I'm riding outdoors. That's a really important difference to make. So it allows the accuracy of your outdoor ride to be accurate when you're riding outdoors if your numbers are very different. For some people, it'll be the same. And if that's the case, then that's great. Testing-wise, I'd advise you to do the test on the bike you're going to be doing the majority of your training on. If you're in an ideal situation and you have a road bike and the TT bike or a tri bike, I would set your tri bike up inside on the trainer and I would have you ride in the TT position all through the winter. I would have you do the test in the TT position and hold that TT position. Don't be tempted to get up out of the saddle. Don't be tempted to sit up if it helps you squeeze a few more watts out. We want you training in the position you're going to race in, and we want you testing in the position you're going to train in. If you have a kicker bike, if you have a watt bike, if you have access to things like that and it's set up indoors, that's absolutely fine. You can train on those. Just use the same bike and the same power meter each time you do your sessions. That's going to allow yourself the consistency of training as you go along. And the last thing to say here is I'm going to reiterate to everybody, this is just a baseline. This is here to set up the numbers that you're going to train off for the next block. If you've previously been really fit and you've had an FTP at 300 in your test and you're actually at 250, don't see that as a failure. Don't see that as having lost anything. See it as a pat on the back for having accurately set your training zones so the next block is going to get you fit as fast as it could be. Because here's the secret nobody really talks about. There's a training response curve. And you are going to get the maximum return on your training for training at or just under 100% of your FTP. There's an exponentially higher energy cost and recovery cost to going above 100% of FTP. So it might be possible for you to do an FTP training session and push yourself on to 103, 105% of FTP and hold those numbers for each of the intervals. It might be possible for you to do that, but I implore you not to. Don't train harder than 100% because it's just going to extend your recovery time and it's not going to give you any extra training benefit. Remember, that curve peaks out at 100%. I would actually rather have the athlete just under 100 than just over 100. Why? Because it means you can get more training done. And the athletes who can't hold themselves back, who can't win that argument with their brain that says, hey, you could push on here. Hey, you could do a sprint finish here. Those are the athletes that end up burning themselves out and end up missing sessions later on in a training block. So success to me is not doing 105% when I've asked for 100%. Success is doing everything at or just under 100 and getting every single session done across a 16-week block. So bear that in mind. It is possible to go harder in a single session, but coach doesn't want you to, and it's actively detracting from your training. So have the courage to train your mind to be strong in the way it needs to be. If the voice in your head is telling you to do more when I'm asking you not to, you're not doing yourself a favor by caving to the voice in your head that is telling you to do more. Because guess what? That same voice in your head is going to be the one that tells you to stop on race day because you're tired. You've got to learn to ignore the voice that's saying strange things to go off plan. And you've got to learn to listen to the voice that says stick to the plan. Okay, moving on then from biking onto swimming. Swimming testing tends to be one that people struggle with the most. And that's because there's a fitness element to swimming as well as a skill element. And the skill element tends to be the most difficult part for people. It's the reason why swimmers talk about feel for the water. You can go into the pool on one day and you can have a really good swim. Doesn't mean your fitness has improved. You can have a really bad swim. It doesn't mean your fitness has dropped. You can have average swims, and that's probably about where your fitness is. Some days we just seem able to grip the water better than others. And other days we grip the water worse than others. And that's what causes these speed changes. So testing frequently in swimming, there's nothing really to be gained by it. It's unlikely to be the fitness changes that change your swim speed across time anyway. It's going to be the technique changes that you manage to consistently apply across time. So really think of the swim as a baseline rather than as a test. It's really great when you do a swim baseline test and the numbers come out higher, really good pat on the back. But often we have athletes who test on the day when they didn't have a great swim and they say, look, I know I'm fitter and faster. I've been seeing more consistent times week on week, but I just didn't see it on test day. That's really, really common. So it's great if you have a really good test, but it's not the end of the world if you do a baseline on the day when you don't have a good swim. So in swimming, a similar test to the FTP test in biking is called the CSS test, critical swim speed. Think of it just like threshold. It's a predictor of how fast you'd be able to swim for an hour in a race situation. Similarly, if you're doing it on your own in training, it's unlikely you could hold this pace for more than 30 minutes in a flat out swim on your own. So that puts some numbers on it. The test is going to be a 400 meters as fast as you can go, separated by 10 minutes, and then a 200 meters as fast as you can go. And at the end of that, you plug the two results into a CSS speed calculator, and it's going to tell you your CSS speed. And then again, just as we talked about in biking, we're going to set specific swim speeds for you to do different parts of your swims at. So there'll be some swim sessions aimed at producing lactic acid and increasing the size of your swim engine. There'll be some swims that are steady endurance swims that are aimed at just getting you to swim steady and changing the fuel supply during swimming. And most importantly, there'll be lots of technique-based swims where you're doing drills where the aim is to change your technique and help you become a better swimmer. That's ultimately what is going to change the way that you swim in the water. Okay, so your 400 meter time and your 200 meter time. The reason we do these two swims is some people are better at longer distance swims. Some people are better at shorter distance swims. This gives us a guide as to whether you're more of a sprinter or more of a long distance swimmer, and the numbers are skewed either way. So guys who are really good at sprinting can put out much faster times in the faster hundreds and fifties than a swimmer who's an endurance swimmer can do. And the CSS test will level that out for people and allow the sessions, again, to be suitable for different kinds of swimmers, but relative to the same training aim that we've got for people. So as a rough guideline here, CSS pace tends to come out for most people at about 4 seconds per 100 slower than you tested at in your 400. So to put some rough numbers on this, if you did an 8-minute 400, you'd have swum at 2 minutes per 400 in the test. Your CSS pace would usually be about 2:04 per 100 meters. Now, it's going to vary up or down depending on how fast or slow you swim the 200, but that's a rough guide for people. And as a rough guide for swim speed, again, this is just finger in the air, most athletes are going to do their half Ironman swim at about CSS plus 4, and they'll do the Ironman swim at about CSS plus 8. I'll say that again in case I messed that up. Half Ironman swims will be at about CSS plus 4, and Ironman swims will be at about CSS plus 8. Again, that's just a very rough number, but it gives you some kind of feeling and bearing for where you are in terms of what those swim speeds will look like. Now, sometimes what you'll find is you'll do your 400 and you'll do your 200, and you'll find that your technique has gone to pot in the 200, and your 200 is actually slower than half of the 400. Well, in that case, all you do is you use half of your 400 time for your 200 time. So put some numbers on that. Say you swam an 8-minute 400, and then you were really tired, your technique's gone in the 200, and you swim 4 minutes 10 for the 200. That would be slower than half of eight would be 4 minutes. I would say just use 4 minutes as your number for the 200. And that way you'll get a CSS pace will come out that is usable for you. Otherwise, it'll create an error in the system. My big top tip for people here when doing the CSS test is everyone is going to swim the first 100 faster than the rest of the swim. And so it's on you to swim within yourself for the first 100, knowing that the second and third 100s tend to be the slowest ones. So even in a really well-paced CSS test, I almost never see people swim the same pace for each of the four 100s. Always tends to be faster over the first 100. But you can really, really affect your test positively by holding yourself back over the first 100 and really increasing effort across the swim. So that would be my top tip for you there. Again, no need to test more than every 8 weeks. And what you'll find is here with your swimming, you'll see the effect of your swim fitness improving or your swim technique improving. You'll see it on a week by week basis in the swims, because if you've got a set of steady hundreds to do, or even a set of hundreds at CSS pace, you'll find you're just naturally going a little bit faster than the pace that you're able to go at. I would still say not to do another test before 8 weeks. We don't want to be testing all the time. Just keep a note of it. Keep a note of the paces that you're swimming as you go along, and that will be enough for you. Okay. And then finally, we're going to move on to the run test and how we do run testing protocols. Now, there's lots of different run tests out there. The first thing is to remember we're only doing this so that you can see progress across a training plan. And in almost all of my triathlon training-based programs, we're going to do the hard work on the bike, and we're going to have you run steady and make it aerobic for the vast majority of the runs. For all except our sprint distance and Olympic distance triathletes, we're going to have very limited fast running in there. All the hard work is going to be done on the bike. And so it's really common for an athlete to come back to me and say, how do I know that my pace is increasing? How do I know I'm getting fitter? How do I know that I should be increasing the pace that I'm running at in training? If I never do any fast runs, if I never push myself hard in training, how can I even expect to be getting fitter and running? And it's a really good question. So the first thing is you've got to trust and believe that you will be getting better and faster at running as a byproduct of training like a triathlete. Your overall body's fitness is improving, and so your run fitness is improving as well at the same time. Now, it's tempting to say, go out and do a 5K race, go out and do a 10K race. But my concern here is the more frequently you race in running, the more often you want to run quick in training, and the more often that you're then going to put yourself at risk of injuries or niggles. So I like to limit people to one fast run every month in training, so a park run or a 10K, nothing more than that. And just use that event to set your initial paces up in our run pace calculator. If you haven't done a 5K or 10K recently, that's okay. Use a best estimate of the kind of pace you think you could run at the moment. Because almost all athletes, if you ask them, will say, I think I could probably do, 45 minutes for 10K right now. Okay, that's good enough. Use that to set your paces to start with. But then when we do our run testing, we're going to do a sub-maximal run test. What that means is, instead of going flat out over 5K or 10K, we're going to do a sub-maximal run. So for those of you who know the run paces, we're going to do it at M pace. So that is, for most people, a tempo run. It's probably about 10 beats a minute lower than threshold heart rate for most athletes. And it's going to feel fast, but comfortably fast. We're going to get you warmed up and we're going to do 45 minutes consistently at M pace and then a cool down. And most importantly, we're going to wear a heart rate monitor during this. And afterwards, we're going to look at the average heart rate of our run. And you'll see that the heart rate levels out at the consistent run pace. And that leveled out area is going to be the heart rate we're interested in. Because when we test again in 8 weeks' time, you're going to see that if you do the run at the same pace, your heart rate is going to be 5, 6, 8 beats a minute lower, showing that you've increased your efficiency as a runner. Now, the other way around we can do this test is in 8 weeks' time, if you've raced in the intervening time and you know you've got faster, reset your M pace, do the test at your new M pace, which will be faster, and you'll see that your heart rate is still the same heart rate it was before, but again, you're going faster at that same heart rate. So it answers that question in our mind of, how do I know that I'm getting fitter at running, even though I'm not racing or not racing very often? You'll see your heart rate getting lower at the same paces, or you'll see your speed increasing at the same heart rate. Again, just like I said with swimming, you've got to remember this is a baseline. You're going to see the results of this on a week-by-week basis. You'll notice over time your heart rate is a couple of beats a minute lower at the same pace that you're running at than it was a couple of weeks earlier. You'll notice this happen as you go along. They are indicators of increasing fitness, and you have to trust, you have to believe that that's what's happening as you go along. Now, I understand it's hard for people who are used to racing a lot, especially if you've come to triathlon from a running background, or you've come from the point of doing a hard run set every week and really getting a measure of, you know, running around a track and knowing within the second how long that takes you on a 400. Once you stop doing that in our training method, it can be hard to keep the faith. So the M-pace run test, the aerobic run test, is a really good way of calming your mind down and getting evidence that you are getting faster. But the most key point to this is you're getting fitter in a way that's most specific to your triathlon performance later in the year. Getting faster over 5K isn't relevant at all to someone who wants to race half Ironman or Ironman. It's not got any relevance at all because it's all about how well you run off the bike. But seeing that your heart rate at M pace is coming down is incredibly relevant, because that M pace is going to be, it's going to be race pace at 70.3 for most athletes if things go well. And it's going to be not far off that for, you know, it's a really good indicator for our Ironman athletes that the right aspect of run fitness is improving as well. Okay, so that brings us to the end of our baseline testing protocol episode. If you've got any questions about this for our coached athletes, just drop me a DM or start a thread in our private community app, and we'll talk about the differences there. And if anyone's got any worries, the key thing to do is to ask a question so I can help put your mind at rest, rather than going on to, the worst thing possible for me is someone who needs to go out and do a 5K race every week in running in order to feel good about themselves. And then that affects the rest of their training negatively for the rest of the week. Talk it through before you do it, because there's that old phrase, isn't there? Oh, I thought I'd ask for forgiveness rather than permission. Well, if I'm not going to give you permission to do the thing in the first place, I'm not going to give you forgiveness for doing the thing I didn't want you to do, am I? So don't ask for forgiveness rather than permission. Let's talk things through beforehand, and I'll explain, as Brian Clough said, we'll talk things through, we'll bounce things back and forth, and then I'll explain why I'm right. Okay? And then that way, we make sure you get the most return on your training time that you could possibly get. Okay, so I hope you've enjoyed this week's episode. Some discount codes and deals for you. At precisionfuelandhydration.com, you can use the code OA23 for 15% off your first electrolyte order. And you can use their free fuel and hydration planning tool to receive a personalized strategy for your new race. for your next race. And listen, if you're not coached by us and you're interested, if you've enjoyed what you've heard today and you're looking to get coaching for the upcoming season, please get in touch. I think we've got the most comprehensive endurance sports coaching program for busy age groupers. You'll know this if you've seen our tri-suits at races. Our athletes are possibly the greatest group of triathletes on the face of the planet. We've got such a welcoming community, and it can be hard training for triathlon on your own. It's a very disparate sport. There's lots of training done on your own indoors on the turbo or the treadmill. And it's nice to have an online community of like-minded people to talk to. And I genuinely think we've got the greatest bunch of people. If you've liked what you've heard as you've heard today, you'll like what you hear inside the team. So book a call with me. I'll talk you through how we train. We'll find out about you and your background and your goals. And if you're a good fit for the team, we can talk about bringing you in and how we can help you get the most out of your limited training time for the upcoming season. Okay, so remember, there's links in the show notes, so you don't have to remember them. And until next week, have a great, safe training and racing week. I'm Coach Rob Wilby, and you've been listening to the Oxygen Addict podcast.